south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, back in the saddle again after a very cool Expat Insider seminar, trekking around both Guatemala and El Salvador. And this time, as usual, we had repeat offenders. Three repeat offenders, by the way. So for all of you out there who just might be new listeners to this show and just are now hearing about my Expat Insider seminars, which I hold around two times each year, if you're wondering if they're fun, information-packed, and worth it, well, I'll ask you this. What other seminars have you ever heard of where people come back over and over again to drink from the proverbial fire hose? Oh, and speaking of repeat offenders, this time we had a first at the seminar. A repeat offender came down with his girlfriend, and as we all found out as rumors flew, he proposed matrimony to her at the seminar. Luckily, she said yes, which was cool because, well, it would have been a bit of bad karma if it turned out any other way. And our seminar lawyer married them in Guatemala. Anyway, this is my first live, or kind of live show, coming off my July 2019 Expat Insider Seminar. And I have a lot of brand new boots on the ground stories to tell you. But first, a little bit about some boots on the ground investigations I've been doing in regards to traffic cops and moving violations and fines if you happen to get pulled over and nailed. Now, you see, in the past couple of months, I've been to five different Latin countries, talking to cops, talking to Uber and cab drivers. And of course, over the years, I've been pulled over a few times myself. So I have a lot of experience when it comes to paying traffic fines and bribes to the cops, too. Anyway, now my investigation of the average cost of traffic fines here in Latin America is over. And for one, what I found out, as you might expect, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, cops are a lot more active, pulling gringos over all the time, especially gringos in rental cars. You can spot a rental car a mile away because in most cases they've got a sticker on the windshield somewhere, or they've got a certain license plate sequence, reflecting the fact that they're rentals. So, as it turns out, you're going to get pulled over a lot more often if you're driving a new, expensive, or light new car, and or if you're driving a rental. Why is that? Well, of course, because cops know you're most likely a tourist or a gringo with lots more money than they have. Plus, your Spanish sucks, and you're in a hurry to get somewhere. Gringos always are. Not to mention because you're in a different country that speaks a different language. You're always more nervous than the average local and are willing to pay whatever they say to get the hell out of there. By the way, speaking of gringos always being in a hurry, and often all wound up when things aren't going right or on time. A couple of days before the Expat Insider Seminar portion in El Salvador, I was a passenger in an Uber way out in the boonies. A nice country road, not much traffic at all, and suddenly we ran into a big roadblock. Turns out a big tractor trailer took the curve too hard and flipped, ended up perpendicular to the road, completely blocking both lanes of traffic. Now, when we stopped, we were about the 10th car from where the cops had set up the roadblock. We could see the truck and its contents splayed all over the road. In fact, the truck blocked the way so thoroughly, motorcycles couldn't even pass. So the motorcycles were piling up at the roadblock, too. Now, this was around 2 in the afternoon. And I asked one of the cops, a lady cop, how much longer? She said, probably a half hour, no more than an hour. Thing is, they had to wait for two big grúas to come. Grúas are tow trucks, and they needed the big-ass ones because this was a semi-trailer. So I did the first-grade math in my head. She said half hour to an hour. That means, let's see now, about 2 hours Latino time. Hey, I know Latin America. I know mañana time, and that's how I calculate any Latino's personal time estimate. All right, so a half hour later. Cops are walking around right in front of me, and I heard one of them talking to another cop on her cell phone saying the traffic was now backed up for 5 kilometers. So I was sitting there with nothing to do. Of course, I have my trusty iPod. It's a lifesaver when you're stuck in situations like that or in the endless lines. Oh, and mine's always loaded with audiobooks and podcasts, never music. I know, it seems odd for an ex-B-grade musician like me, you know, not to have any music at all on that device. But my philosophy has always been I'd rather be educated than entertained. Though if you pick the right material, education can be entertaining, right? Anyway, I did the second grade math in my head, figuring each car took up a space of roughly 20 feet, and with a kilometer being around 3,500 feet, so with a 5 kilometer long traffic backup, that would be around 850 cars. Nope, not good, but at least I was at the front of the line. All right, so time rolls on. We're into hour two. Still, no go. Turns out my own mañana time estimates had failed me. But suddenly, a small trickle of vendors appeared. Ladies and kids, they'd knock on your window and show you their goods for sale. Coca-Cola bottled water, cakes, snacks, junk food, pecans, peanuts, all kinds of nuts, even cold beer. And you know, by hour two, almost everyone had their doors flung open, and people were walking around, mingling with people in the other cars who were in the same predicament. Not a sour word amongst them. Much like a spontaneous tailgate party, it was also a proof of spontaneous capitalism and how humans are drawn to it. You gotta wonder how that happened, and it happens all the time, even way out in the boonies where there's practically nothing. Normally, in the boonies, there's just widely spaced block or tin shack houses, punctuated by a hole-in-the-wall convenience store and gas station every so often. You'll also see some hole-in-the-wall dumps along the road called pinchazos. P-I-N-C-H-A-Z-O. Oh, and for the uninitiated, a pinchazo is a tire repair shop. They're everywhere and super convenient, too. I can't tell you how many dozens of times I've used them myself. They're usually tin shacks attached to a tin shack living quarters, fitted out with stacks of very used tires, which they'll sell you if they can't repair your puncture because it's too big or the tire's torn. By the way, it'll cost you $1 to $2 to have your tire fixed. All right, so where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. By hour three, there was a virtual mini marketplace going on. It just spontaneously appeared. And of course, being way off the gringo tourist trail, I was the only gringo in sight. And the amazing thing, everyone, and I mean everyone, was smiling, happy, and having a good old time like it was a Sunday afternoon. And it was a work day, a Wednesday. Amazingly, none of them seemed stressed, except me, the gringo, because we all have this built-in sense of urgency, don't we? It's something within us like road rage that we never seem to completely shed. So in the end, it turned out to be a 4-hour tailgate party until finally the gruas came and hauled that truck off to the side. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. The average cost of transit violations. As usual, there are two different tiers. When you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail, which encompasses around 15 of the 20 Latin countries, and then the other 5, like Costa Rica, Panama, Mexico, Colombia, and now Ecuador. All right, let's talk about the average traffic fines you'll have to pay if you're caught by the cops driving like a dick when you're off the tourist trail. Oh, and of course, these apply if the cops actually want to stop you for these violations, and when you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail, they rarely do. However, when you're on the trail, like I said, they'll target the gringos and tourists every time. Anyway, when you're off the trail, for example, if you make an illegal U-turn and they actually catch you, average fine around $12. Yeah, you heard right, $12. Now, what would that cost you if you were caught doing that back in the States? And get this, average fine for passing in a no-passing zone? And I've never seen anyone stopped or nailed for that. Average fine, $15. Remember, every country is similar yet different because they've got their own funny money that doesn't quite relate to even dollar amounts. Except Panama, Ecuador, and El Salvador, they use U.S. dollars. So, for example, in Honduras at the present time, if you get pulled over for illegally passing someone in a no-passing zone, it's $11.43 because their lempira funny money is around 24 to the dollar. All right, next, and this is really amazing. If you get caught driving without a license, and you actually have a license, but you just don't have it on you that day. Average fine off the Gringo Tourist Trail, $15. However, if you never had a license, the fine, $35. If you're caught with a license that expired, the fine, $20. Now, as I'm rattling this stuff off, just think of what kind of fines you'd be nailed with if you were in Chicago or Cleveland. You get caught without a license in the U.S., they'll impound your car. In Latin America, they don't do that. Unless you get into an accident, you don't have insurance, or you hit someone and put them in the hospital. Even so, if you got a Latin lawyer you can get on the phone with right away, he can talk to the cops for you, and many times they won't impound your car, as long as you haven't killed anybody. All right, next we've got this group of traffic offenses on the books, but most cops won't write you up. Why? Because so many people violate them, including the cops. Of course, if they pull you over and you're a wise ass, that negates your gringo advantage and all bets are off. Oddly enough, there are fines for people who don't have headlights and taillights, which makes me laugh because 1 out of 4 cars don't, including cop cars. Average fine if they write you up, which they almost never will, $16. Also, if you're caught not wearing a seatbelt or talking on a cell phone, which is prohibited, just like up in the States. You know, they've got all the same laws, although almost no one ever gets fined for that. However, if a cop's in a bad mood or you're an a-hole, average fine, $35. All right, how about this fine? Sounds like it's from another planet. Driving with false license plates. Man, if that happened in the States, you'd probably be looking at some hard time. Anyway, if it happens here in Latin America, at least off the tourist trail, average fine, $60. Crazier still, they'll let you ride off. They won't impound your car. Oh, and here's one the Uber and taxi drivers were complaining about. They said, if you park your car in a preferential parking place, that is, one that's reserved for maggotous, pustulent, dung-breathed government officials, the fine, also about $60. However, if you park in a regular no-parking zone, like in front of a hydrant. Oh, and by the way, I've talked to some bomberos, that is firemen down here, and they say probably 95% of all the fire hydrants you see aren't functional. Anyway, the fine for being in a regular no-parking zone, $15. All right, what about drunken driving? If you get caught, fail the test in front of the cops, etc., the fine, on average, off the Gringo Tourist Trail, $60. Oh, and by the way, it's up to the discretion of the cop whether they'll let you drive home or they might just accompany you home and drive your car for you. Kind of like Otis and Deputy Fife in Mayberry, huh? Next, we've got the case when you're drunk and you've gotten into an accident. Average fine, off the Gringo Tourist Trail, $60 again. Man, if that happened to you in the States, total cost could go as high as $10,000. I know it happened to my brother. Oh, and here in Latin America, off the tourist trail, if that happens, you're drunk and you get in a crack up, they'll take your car for sure and pound it. And you will spend anywhere from 48 to 72 hours in jail. They'll hold you there. However, I've been told by cops, taxi, and Uber drivers, depends if you're at fault or not. I mean, really, they're saying you could be a drunk driver and get in an accident, and if you're not at fault, which you probably are because you're drunk, you'll pay a $65 fine and walk, or stumble, depending. You know, like I said, these are averages for countries off the Gringo Tourist Trail, like Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Bolivia, Argentina, etc. Now let's give an example of drunken driving if you're in one of those gringoized countries, like Panama or Costa Rica. Listen to this. Drunken driving charge, Costa Rica, first offense, $495. By the way, in those gringoized countries like Panama and Costa Rica, you heard me mention the transit cops have a direct line to the airport. So if you don't pay that fine, you're not flying out, which is not the case at all in those 15 countries off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Anyway, cost of drunken driving, first offense, Costa Rica, $495. Panama, first offense, drunken driving, $700. Still nothing compared to what the fines are in the States, but 5 to 10 times what you'll pay if you're caught drunk driving in a Latin country off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Now, the thing is, you read once in a while in the Spanish language newspapers, and those papers you don't read, I know, that certain groups would put pressure on legislators to increase those fines. But they'll only do that reluctantly because legislators are often heavy drinkers and alcoholics themselves. Because, you know, it's one of the perks of power to be an asshole driver. When you've got government plates and you're feeding deep in the trough, the cops will almost always give you a pass, except if you're drunk and you kill somebody. Think of it this way. Canadians, hockey, priests, little boys, politicians, booze. That's the way of the world. But you knew that already. Perfect example, Boris Yeltsin. You know, it's been said more than once that politics is like a toilet in a taco bar. Only the biggest, most disgusting chunks float to the top. But I digress. Man, did I digress. Anyway, speaking of Latin cops, here's something that hasn't escaped my attention. Here's an article that's entitled, Transit Commission Introduces Barcode System for Reporting Traffic Cop Corruption. And this one comes out of Ecuador. It's from July 14, 2019, just a couple weeks ago, and I'll paraphrase. It says, Ecuador's Transit Commission, the CTE, is introducing a barcode system that allows residents to report bribery demands or other misconduct by transit police or officials. The new program is called, quote, Don't Give Corruption a Chance. Then it says, according to Edison Moscosa, CTE director, barcodes will be attached to transit police cars and badges and will also appear at CTE offices throughout the country. Those who believe they are being asked for bribes or feel they are being treated unfairly by transit cops can then photograph a barcode on their cell phone and the data sent immediately to be filed and analyzed. It says the system works with Twaddle, Instafart, and Fakebook and can be downloaded from the App Store or Google Play. It says the system will reduce guesswork and uncertainty of identifying transit cops who allegedly demand bribes from drivers. Then there's a quote. It says, "We receive many complaints from motorists about corruption, but rarely have the names of the officers involved, making it difficult to pursue disciplinary or legal action." All right, sounds good, right? Well, not so fast. Problem is, cops don't come right out and ask you for a bribe. They usually set you up by trying to throw a scare into you, saying your paperwork's not in order. They're going to impound your car, take you down to the station, whatever. Finally, inching towards the idea of a bribe, and you might be suggesting it yourself by saying something like, "Officer, listen, isn't there a chance we could settle all this? I'll just pay the fine here and now, if that's all right with you." Of course, that's an invitation to bribery because you don't pay any fine right on the spot. However, as mentioned earlier, gringos always seem to be in a hurry, ready and willing to drop 20, 50, even 100 bucks to avoid having to go down to the police station and hang out there for a few hours. Even though the cops want to throw that at you, it'll almost never come to pass. Normally, it's just a way to try to get you to pay off right there, because they know if they take you down to the station, they'll have to let you go and they'll get nothing out of you. So, in the end, I'm not so sure about that Ecuador barcode anti-corruption scheme. Besides that, one thing I know for sure, whether you're in the first, second, or third world, the cops do not like to get photographed. If you want to instantly get on their bad side, pull out your cell phone and have at it. All right, now for something completely different. Seems like every astute person over 50 realizes young kids today, especially millennials, don't know history nor the lessons of history. Which begs the question, do Latinos know American history or Latino history? Nope, it seems like they're even more clueless about their own history as North Americans are. That's why there's this love-hate relationship going with most Latinos concerning their Spanish Old World roots and heritage. In fact, it's only been since 2012, you know, the end of the Mayan calendar, end of the world thing, that indigenous people have embraced being Mayan or Inca, whatever, as their proud heritage. Whereas it seems every single Ladino, that's a person of mixed Spanish and indigenous blood, will to a person lie or heavily exaggerate to the upside the amount of old world Spanish blood running through their veins. They'll always maximize the Spanish portion and minimize the indigenous. Just as the old adage goes, North American women, that is gringas, lie about their age and weight, men about their incomes and sexual conquests, and Latinos about their percentage of old world Spanish blood. Now, I believe if you're going to live or visit here, there are certain things about the culture you have to know because there are just too many clueless gringos who just don't get it. The history here and its effect on the people is complicated, but we'll give it a try. You know, I once read a book, I think it was 850 pages. Its title was something like Cortes, Pizarro, and the Conquest of the Americas. An excellent read, but in no way a thumbnail sketch. However, you see, there's an impossibly excellent book out there right now called Sapiens, as in Homo sapiens. It's basically the history of mankind. And now I'm going to read an excerpt for you, a small part, of the Conquest of the Americas. Now, if you pay attention to this, you'll know more than 99.9% of Latinos about their own heritage and, of course, gringos and expats too. So here it goes. By the way, if you want the PDF, Kindle, or audiobook, shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'd be glad to send it off to you. All right, here it goes, and I'll tighten it up for you best I can. The title is Invasion from Outer Space. Around 1517, Spanish colonists in the Caribbean islands began to hear vague rumors about a powerful empire somewhere in the center of Mexican mainland. A mere 4 years later, the Aztec capital was a smoldering ruin. The Aztec Empire was a thing of the past, and Hernan Cortes lorded over a vast new empire, Mexico. The Spaniards did not stop to congratulate themselves or even to catch their breath. They immediately commenced explore and conquer operations in all directions. The previous rulers of Central America, the Aztecs, Toltecs, the Maya, barely knew South America existed and never made an attempt to subjugate it over the course of 2,000 years. Yet, within little more than 10 years of the Spanish conquest of Mexico, Francisco Pizarro had discovered the Inca Empire in South America and vanquished it. Had the Aztecs and Incas shown a bit more interest in the world surrounding them, and had they known what the Spaniards had done to their neighbors, things would have been different. In the years separating Columbus's first journey in 1492 from the landing of Cortes in Mexico in 1519, the Spaniards conquered and set up colonies. For the subjugated natives, however, these colonies were hell on earth, They were ruled with an iron fist by greedy, unscrupulous colonists who enslaved them and set them to work in the mines and plantations, killing anyone who offered the slightest resistance. Most of the native population, perhaps 90%, soon died, either because of the harsh working conditions or the virulence of the diseases that hitchhiked to America on the conqueror sailing ships. Within 20 years, almost the entire native Caribbean population was wiped out. The Spanish colonists then began importing African slaves to fill the vacuum. This genocide took place on the very doorstep of the Aztec Empire. Yet when Cortes landed on the empire's eastern coast, the Aztecs knew nothing about it. The coming of the Spaniards was the equivalent of an invasion from outer space. The Aztecs were convinced that they knew the entire world and that they ruled most of it. To them, it was unimaginable that outside of their domain could exist anything like these Spaniards. When Cortes and his men landed on the sunny beaches of today's Veracruz, it was the first time Aztecs encountered a completely unknown people. They had trouble deciding what these strangers were. Unlike known humans, the aliens had white skins, they had lots of facial hair, and had hair the color of the sun. They also stank horribly. Native hygiene was far better than Spanish hygiene. When the Spaniards first arrived in Mexico, natives bearing incense burners were assigned to accompany them wherever they went. Spaniards thought it was a mark of divine honor. We know now from native sources they found the newcomers' smell unbearable. The aliens' material culture was even more bewildering. They came in giant ships, the like of which Aztecs had never imagined, let alone seen. They rode on the back of huge, terrifying animals, swift as the wind. They could produce lightning and thunder out of shiny metal sticks. They had flashing long swords and impenetrable armor against which the natives' wooden swords and flint spears were useless. Some Aztecs thought these must be gods. Others argued they were demons or ghosts of the dead or powerful sorcerers. So instead of concentrating all available forces and wiping out the Spaniards, the Aztecs deliberated, dawdled, and negotiated. They saw no reason to rush. After all, Cortes had only 550 Spaniards with him. What could 550 do to an empire of millions? Cortes was equally ignorant about the Aztecs, but he and his men held significant advantages. While Aztecs had no experience to prepare them for the arrival of these strange-looking and foul-smelling aliens, the Spanish knew the earth was full of unknown human realms, and no one had greater expertise in invading and dealing with situations about which they were utterly ignorant. For modern European conquerors, like the modern European scientists, they were plunging into the unknown, and it was exhilarating. So when Cortes anchored off that sunny beach July 1519, he did not hesitate to act. Like a science fiction alien emerging from his spaceship, he declared to the awestruck locals, "We come in peace. Take us to your leader." Cortes explained he was a peaceful emissary from the great king of Spain and asked for a diplomatic interview with the Aztec king, Montezuma II. Yes, he of Montezuma's revenge. The ever-present generational scourge of backpackers and clueless gringos. I added that, by the way. Anyway, stating he was a peaceful emissary was a shameless lie. Cortes led an independent expedition of greedy adventurers. In fact, the king of Spain had never even heard of Cortes, nor of the Aztecs. But Cortes was given guides, food, and some military assistance by the local enemies of Montezuma, king of the Aztecs. He then marched towards the capital, the great metropolis, which is now Mexico City, and the Aztecs allowed the aliens to march all the way in. Then they led him to Montezuma's chamber. In the midst of the interview, Cortes gave a signal and his steel-armored Spaniards butchered all of Montezuma's bodyguards, who were only armed with wooden clubs and stone blades. Then Cortes, the honored guest, took the king prisoner. However, Cortes was now in a very delicate situation. He captured the emperor, but was surrounded by tens of thousands of enemy warriors and millions of hostile civilians, and an entire continent about which he knew practically nothing. He had at his disposal only a few hundred Spaniards, and the closest Spanish reinforcements were in Cuba, more than 1,500 kilometers away. Cortes then kept Montezuma captive in the palace, making it look as if the king remained free and in charge as if the Spanish ambassador, Cortes, were no more than a guest. Now remember, the Aztec Empire was extremely centralized, and this unprecedented situation paralyzed it. Montezuma continued to behave as if he ruled the empire, and the Aztec elite continued to obey him, which meant they actually obeyed Cortes. This went on for several months. Soon enough, many more Spanish soldiers and settlers began arriving from Mexico and Cuba. And before the locals realized it, it was too late. Within a century of the landing at Veracruz, the native population of the Americas had shrunk by 90%. and the survivors found themselves under the thumb of a greedy, racist regime that was far worse than that of the Aztecs. Flash to South America. 10 years after Cortes landed in Mexico, Pizarro arrived on the shore of the Inca Empire. He had far fewer soldiers than Cortes, an expedition of only 168 men. But Pizarro benefited from all the knowledge and experience gained by Cortes in the previous invasion. The Inca, however, knew nothing about the fate of the Aztecs in Mexico to the north. Pizarro in South America plagiarized Cortes's moves exactly. He declared himself a peaceful emissary of the King of Spain, invited the Inca ruler Atahualpa to a diplomatic interview, and then kidnapped him. So then, for the next 300 years, Europeans enjoyed undisputed mastery in America and Oceania, in the Atlantic and the Pacific. Now, some people will say the Europeans benefited the conquered populations by bringing them progress, providing them with medicine, education, built railroads, canals, ensured justice systems, and prosperity. Those European conquerors claimed their empires were not vast enterprises of exploitation, but rather altruistic projects conducted for the sake of non-European races. As recalled in the poem of the famous writer, Rudyard Kipling, called The White Man's Burden. The poem goes like this. Take up the white man's burden, send forth the best ye breed. Go bind your sons to exile, to serve your captives' need. To wait in heavy harness, on fluttered folk and wild, your new-caught sullen peoples, half devil and half child. Then it says, in truth, neither the narrative of oppression and exploitation nor that of the white man's burden completely matches the facts. The European Empire did so many things on so many different scales that you can find plenty of examples to support whatever you want to say about them. You think these empires were evil monstrosities that spread death, oppression, and injustice around the world? You could easily fill an encyclopedia with their crimes. However, if you want to argue that they in fact improved the conditions of their subjects with medicine, better economic conditions, and greater security, you could fill another encyclopedia with those achievements. But it's sure the one force behind all this was capitalism. In 1484, Christopher Columbus approached the King of Portugal, Italy, France, and England, and pitched it like a present-day startup entrepreneur. He needed potential investors. He was rejected by everyone but Spain. So just think, without Queen Isabel of Spain, all Latin Americans would be speaking German, Dutch, English, or French. If English, their national sport may have been cricket. If conquered by the French, think of it. They'd be eating croissants instead of tacos, champagne instead of rum and tequila, no salsa, no samba, no rumba. And the ladies, hairy legs and armpits. To be continued. You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!